Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for tuning in to another edition of Oddcast the Podcast, or A World Empowered Dialogues. Here at A World Empowered, we have a philanthropic vision. We have a vision of the world where all women, men, and children are empowered. Empowered to speak their truth, empowered to be themselves, empowered to provide for their needs, and protect and heal the environment. Every week we bring in inspiring guests and thought leaders, founders of nonprofits around the globe, to share a message of hope and to inoculate people with the belief that they can make a difference. To share their stories of struggle and trauma and where they've come from and what they've decided to create and contribute to the world. We're adults here having adult conversations, so often there's adult language involved, but we want to thank you for being a part of this and for sharing the message and for tuning in. So get ready for another inspiring conversation with another thought leader and get ready to get odd. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. BC here, coming to you with another episode of Oddcast the Podcast. Today, I get to sit down in the home of my good friend, Jerry Hallman. He is the franchise owner of Goosehead Insurance and one of the best agents that I've ever seen. I know this isn't an attractive conversation. This isn't a sexy or really high energy or engaging conversation for a lot of people, but this is something that is more important than I think people realize. You know, as a landlord, I've had multiple claims from bad tenants over the years, any one of which I probably could have lost everything if I didn't have my butt properly covered. So we're going to talk today with Jerry Hallman, again, the franchise owner in here in Larimer County, Colorado, about protecting and covering your assets. Jerry, welcome. Thank you for meeting me. Brian. Thank you for inviting me into your home. And I'm really excited to hear what we have to share with people. Yeah. Why don't you introduce yourself and tell the audience where you're from and a little bit of your backstory?
Sure. So as Brian said, my name is Jerry Hallman, and I do own a franchise with Goosehead Insurance. I am primarily in the states of Washington, Oregon, Colorado, Wyoming, and North Carolina. I know that seems a little strange. Those places are a little all over the country, but I'm a former retired military officer. I'm a retired colonel. And so I traveled a lot and made a lot of connections in different places. So I have a brick and mortar building in Washington State, which is where most of my business is conducted. And since I moved here to Colorado a couple of years ago, I'm kind of hopping back and forth between here and Washington. So, yeah.
Colonel in the military. How long were you there?
It's kind of a strange story. I was enlisted first out of high school. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. And
like most of us.
Yeah. So I had qualified for some scholarships, but not enough. And my family situation wasn't such that we could do the college thing right out of high school. So I went into the Air Force and did pharmacy. I was a pharmacy technician. And while I was in, I applied to the Air Force Academy, which I got accepted to.
Nice.
And graduated from the Air Force Academy down near Colorado Springs. Mm-hmm. Great place to tell people you're from. A horrible place to be at. Yeah. Go to school. I did not enjoy that experience at all. I hated it so much that when I graduated from the academy, I commissioned into the army as an armor officer for tanks.
I'm done with the Air Force.
I was done.
Moving out.
Nice. Yeah. So I did that and had a fun little stint in the Middle East in 2005 and 2006.
A fun little stint.
Yeah, that definitely was not. Don't need to ever go. I don't ever want to go back.
I don't blame you.
I'm not one of those people that went and fought in Vietnam and then want to go back and see Vietnam later. As far as I'm concerned, that part of my life.
Once
is enough, yeah. And then 2008, December 7th, actually, 2008, day that will remain forever infamous.
Yep.
I got out of the active military. I was a major at the time. Joined the reserve and had to find a job. I was going to be an HR director and I had applied to Boeing and had something lined up to be an HR director at Boeing. And at that point in time, as things happen in the world, it was a really bad time to try to find a job. It was 2008, the end of it. And you remember we had like a financial crisis.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. I was running my furniture company at that time and I think I went 8 months without selling a single item.
Yeah,
it was a rough period.
Well, what happened, so I had been offered, I think it was about $120,000 to start working, which was enough to make me leave the military and say, yeah, I can do this. And
this was with Boeing?
This would have been with Boeing, yeah. And what happened was Washington Mutual, which was a bank in Washington State, they collapsed right around that time. And so the market was flooded with people looking for work. And Boeing, whoever I was working with at the time, their recruiter said, well, the market's flooded and that $120 a year offer is now 60.
Yeah.
So take it or leave it. And I said, absolutely not.
I'm 120K.
Yep.
Cut in half.
And so I started looking for work and I saw an ad for insurance, for Farmers Insurance. I knew nothing about insurance. And I went to the interview and watched the spiel. It seemed very interesting. And I said, okay, why not? Well, that's when I had never done sales in my life. Had always been in the military. So I think that's a good background though for insurance because I was used to protecting people in a larger sense. And I got to transition into a job where I actually get to protect people.
And you don't have to carry a gun or get shot at.
Well, hopefully not. There's probably some situations hopefully where that's not true. I mean, we have had some interesting clients throughout the last 16 years.
I've always liked the business model of insurance. I haven't known very many. I'm currently really happy with my particular agent. They've really treated me well over the years that I've worked with them. Like I said, they protected my butt on several really challenging situations, particularly with tenants. I've also known a lot of shady ones, but I dig the business model of it because it's quasi passive income. Once you create the relationship and you've got the customer and you keep them happy, generally speaking, as long as you have a good company with a good plan and you take care of your people, then you're building a quasi passive income with it. So I've always really been attracted to the business model side of it.
It can be challenging. So for example, so I was with Farmers for, I think 12 years before I left and joined Goosehead. And the reason I did that was that I was a captive agent, meaning I could only sell for one company. Mm. And with Goosehead, I'm a broker. So I have, it depends on, if you look at all my life insurance companies and everything together, I have over 120 options for people at any given time. And I also have another brokerage I created back in 2009. It's called Excess Lines. So those are things that, if you go and you get declined for insurance, you might think, oh my gosh, I'm uninsurable. I can't get help. Well, I have options for you in most cases. And that's that separate brokerage. So the business model, as you mentioned, it is based on residual. There is a little bit of a barrier to entry into the field. Unless you go to a captive company like Farmers or something, they'll help you out a lot of times, but you really need enough capital to survive about 3 years on your own because you're not going to make any money.
Yeah, you're just building a business. You have to build that nest egg, that organization, that army of people with you.
Working. And you're paid on commission. And so, I mean, so people are always wanting to get the cheapest insurance, right? They don't want to pay a lot for insurance. So my job is to find them the best rates for the right coverage to make sure that they're adequately and properly insured, not overinsured. And I hate this phrase, but to use the term, not insurance poor. So what that means is, let's say, you know, the general commission is probably 10%. So if I sell someone a policy for $1,000, I probably worked, I don't know, it could be anywhere from, depending on the risk, you know, 3 days, 24 hours on their property, and I make $100. So that's really tough when you think about all the overhead you have, the licensing, that continual education, which there is a whole lot of education that's required. And I have two employees to pay.
Right.
So you have to, and a lot of times when you're competing against other people. So as a captive agent, when I was with Farmers, it was really hard because about of every 150 people I would speak with, I might get one client.
That's a low conversion rate.
Right. It's very low. And with Goosehead, since I've become a broker, prior to last year, it was about, I'd say it was 19 out of every 20 people I spoke to. Right now, I'm probably running at about 15 for every 20.
So you're still in that 80 percentile closing rate.
Right.
Nice.
Right. So, but there's a lot of time that goes into it and you don't get paid for work that you do if people don't go with you.
Of course.
And so there's a lot of wasted time.
Upfront investment.
Yes.
Going back to the captive broker part, it seems like there could be situations where you end up in a moral dilemma in that kind of environment where you know in your heart that there's probably something better out there that could be, that could give better coverage at a lower price. But because you're working in that environment for that agency, that you're not allowed to offer them other opportunities because everything has to be in-house. How did you manage that?
Yeah. So,
because for me, that would be hard knowing that I know there's a better thing out there, but I can't tell you about it.
Yeah. And that's actually in some circumstances, that's that prohibits company policy. I know what it's called selling away. You're basically giving the business away. And if you're with the captive company, they don't like that. They, you can be terminated for that in some cases, depending on what it is. But yeah, there are some ethical dilemmas that you come up with. I still have those today. As a broker, I can offer many options usually for people. It's based on driving history and, you know, all the details of the individual. There's no two people that are ever going to get the same price in auto insurance and or any insurance. And I think that's one of the things that's most frustrating to me is when someone will come up and say, well, my neighbor's paying $150, you know, a month for auto insurance and I'm paying $300. Well, you're not your neighbor. And even if you were twins, exact the same, you know, identical twins, same DNA almost exactly. And you married twins, you're still going to have different aspects, you know, so it's never the same. And I always tell people, please don't compare what you're paying with what your neighbor's paying. Driving history, credit history, life history. There's like 10,000 factors that go into it. You're never going to get what they're going to get.
What's now, the biggest thing, like if the twin scenario, what is the biggest thing that would change the rate from one person to another?
Probably credit.
Yeah.
Your credit history has a big impact on your insurance score because it demonstrates responsibility. So people that, you know, of course there's situations where your credit's going to be damaged because of medical, right? Or things like that. So it's not really always fair.
Or in my case, I have zero credit cards, zero debt, and zero history. So I have I think my credit score is up to 685 now. Mm-hmm. Very mediocre.
Yeah.
So but it's because I don't have a credit history.
Right.
My mortgage, I bought my properties on an owner carry. So even my mortgage payments aren't being reported to Equifax or TransUnion. I have zero credit cards. So I don't have a crappy credit score, but it's not good. Like 685 is like right there in the lower middle.
You end up paying more for insurance. I mean, it is a small part of your insurance score, but it does tier you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of times people that it does seem kind of backwards. People that are maybe struggling more have to pay more, and it doesn't seem right. And a lot of times, and I want to circle back real quick.
Yeah.
So that back to that dilemma thing. You're stuck offering the product you have, but I will tell you even today, if there's carriers and I, you know, especially with young people, it's very hard for them right now. If they're coming in, never had insurance before because pre-existing insurance is a qualifier. A lot of times, there are other companies that I don't represent that I will send them to if I think they can get a better rate.
Nice.
Because it's the right thing to do. And that's what I'm doing. You know, why I do what I do a lot of it.
Yeah. I mean, we could really digress into, I'm very averse to the way the system is set up, particularly the credit score system. We don't tend to promote growth and self-reliance in this country as well as we could. Like you were saying, we could switch the social welfare system to a promotion where the better your life gets, the more you get versus the better life gets, the more likely you are to lose your benefits there. We can switch it where kids are incentivized and have better opportunities to get, like auto insurance or something because they don't have a history or whatever. I also understand the side of the insurance companies were like, then this is a 16-year-old kid driving a Ford Mustang that their parents maybe bought them and they don't know how to drive and they're kind of reckless because they think they're invincible. That's what I was like. I get both sides of it. I don't want to digress too much in that because we can spend the entire conversation. So credit score, what's the second biggest thing?
Yeah, probably your zip code. I would say that has a lot to do with it. Yeah, where you live. Because the insurance companies, they take data and they're very good with data. They're actuaries. They have so much data probably 100 years worth of data, claims history, and they all share this, a lot of it. There are some proprietary data, but there's lots that's shared amongst the different companies. And if you were to go down to it, there's probably over 1,000 insurance companies. But in the end of the day, they all are subsidiaries of somebody else. There's only about 3 insurance companies in the world that control all the other insurance companies. So it's all filtered. So they're sharing information. Mm. So they got this data, quantitative data. And basically what you pay for insurance isn't really what you should be paying for insurance. So a good example, let me use houses, for instance. So let's say you have a house that's worth $100,000. When they're insuring that house, they're looking at all these different things like proximity to a fire station, how many fire stations, what type of fire station it is, what the house is made out of, how old is the house? And they're looking at what a total loss for that house would be. So they're thinking, you know, the fire department's 2 miles away. If they get there, that house, we might only lose 50% of that house. So they're only going to charge you insurance, believe it or not, when they give you your premium for 50%, because they're not thinking they're going to lose the whole house.
So if you're thinking of moving, try to move within a block or two of the fire station.
And not a volunteer fire station.
Oh, right? Really?
You want to have one that's got permanent people that are assigned, because volunteers have to come.
Right, right. They have to drive to get to the station. That makes sense.
Yeah, there are so many factors that go in. Liability is probably the most important thing. Now, liability is going to cost you more as that increases. But what that is that's acts that you cause. You mentioned that 16-year-old driving.
Mm-hmm.
So the issue isn't them really hurting their own vehicle and that costing insurance. It's what they can do to other people. So if that 16-year-old, the Mustang, hits you, you know, it hurts you. The cost of insurance is driven because of the medical,
right?
Medical bills. So, you know, 20 years ago, if you broke your arm and you went to the hospital, it's probably going to cost you, you know, like $800 ER visit. And then, I don't know, probably another $1,200 for the cast or something. Today, that same thing that's going to happen, well, they're probably going to x-ray you and mm-hmm. everything else. And if you're
there's
in a car
$800
accident,
bucks right there.
Yeah. I mean, you're spending an accident where there's a minor injury is going to cost you $20,000. So that's cost the insurance companies $20,000. That is not enough. And when you exacerbate your limit of insurance, and there's a lot of people driving around with minimum limits, which is $25,000. When it goes above that $25,000, insurance company is going to say, hey, we met our obligation. We paid that bill. Sorry that the medical bills for the person you hit were $100,000. You need to come up with that other $75,000 that you've been ordered in court to pay.
So how do you make sure that you're covered in that situation?
Good question. You make sure that you carry the high enough liability limits so that you are covered. If you own a home and you're not carrying a minimum of $500,000 plus and probably an umbrella for $1 million, you're risking the equity in your home too. That's something that can be taken from you in the event of a negligent accident. My recommendation to people is when you're looking at getting liability coverage, the auto is your biggest threat. That's where you're going to most likely have something happen that's going to come back against you in a lawsuit.
Right.
And there are other things that can happen, but the auto is almost always where the money is going to be paid out at. So what?
And why is that? Is that because that's the place where we are at most danger?
Yes. You're going to hit somebody and owe something. That's because if you're in your house and someone comes out of your house and falls,
right,
it's not very likely there's going to be a super huge claim. It could happen.
It's 50-50 whether or not they blame themselves or blame you if they slip on ice or whatever. But if you're in the car,
it's pretty. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
So what I always tell people and what I do when, you know, I try to find out what their risk tolerance is. First of all, I know, you know, are they willing to take risk when you're trying to determine what amount of insurance you should carry? My rule of thumb to start out with everybody, if they can afford it, you know, cause we can tier down, but I always like to start it. Let's see what the best coverage is. And for your situation, and let's find out what company will offer the best rate for that. Because it can change. Like one company might be really good at insuring you at $500,000, and a different company might be better at insuring you for $50,000. It depends, because they have sweet spots. That's the advantage of a broker. Again, when I was with Farmers, they only wanted good drivers. You know, so if you were not such a good driver or not a homeowner, they only wanted homeowners, right? You would pay more. So I have all these different options. You know, I have Allstate, Nationwide, Travelers, Safeco. Just to name a few, I have much more than that, but they each have sweet spots for different kinds of people. And so I find out what kind of person you are by your profile, where you live, the kind of house you have, you know, are you a landlord, all these different things, take all those factors and find out what's best for you. But what you should always do when you're trying to determine your liability is say, what do I own? And add that value up. Do I have any investments? Do I have future income? Because your wages can get garnished too,
right?
25% for 20 years. So you want to find out what that number is. And that's the number you should start out with.
What is the potential loss?
Yep.
Like if I lost everything,
yep.
What does that figure add up to?
Correct. And okay. And if you go lower than that, what are you willing to lose? Right. So that's a personal choice. And I can't make that choice for anybody. I just give them options.
So is there an app for that? Or is it just time in the market? Like what did you say? You've been doing this for 17 years?
16 years.
Yeah. Is it just the time in the market and knowing, based on your back history and understanding who the person that you're working with is, knowing which companies to vet, which companies to go to look for them? Or is there actually a program or an app that you can type in? This is kind of my person. This is their risk factor. This is their demographic and all their metrics.
Great question. So it's both. It's an art and a science. I really don't like to work with people who are internet people. So people that are going online and doing their quotes with Progressive, and Progressive is one of my companies, I'm going to get you a better price with Progressive than you will. Because you don't know the right things to tell the system.
Gotcha.
And they're going to sell your information 100 times. You're going to start getting emails and everything else. And a lot of times people try to avoid that. So they put in false information, right? If you go online and do a quote and you're not honest with everything, you're not going to get an accurate price.
Does that negatively reflect on you too?
Yes, it can.
Let's say
you don't tell me you have an accident. Okay. Or a speeding ticket. I like speeding tickets. Let's say you don't tell me you have a speeding ticket because you're like, I'm not going to tell my insurance agent because I don't want him to, you know, charge me more. Well, I'm going to find out.
Yeah, it's in the system somewhere.
You can't hide it. I don't care how good you are. You can't hide it. So when I put the quote in initially, if I say you have a speeding ticket, it's going to come back and tell me an accurate price. If you know the date, you know, and what the actual violation was. If you didn't tell me anything and I told the system that you were clean, it's going to come back and it says that person lies. And so you're going to be surcharged. And there's people out there that say that doesn't happen. I guarantee you it happens because I've tried it.
You've seen it.
So
don't lie. Even if you want to work with Flo at Progressive, Jerry can still get you a better rate.
That's right. So get
in touch with a broker.
Flo is called Progressive Direct and we do Progressive. So there's two kinds of Progressive. Yeah. Well, you wouldn't know.
No,
it's very complicated.
I just watched the Super Bowl ads.
Yeah. But some of it is a feeling. Like I know after about 5 minutes of talking with somebody and speaking with them and understanding what they have, and you know what their situation is, if they have kids, if their kids are good students, you know, there's so many factors. I might know where to put them. Okay. It's going to come down to about 3 carriers. I can usually narrow it down. So I only have to quote 3, but to your question, I have what's called a rater, and it's an aggregator basically. So I take the data and I put it in this system. And what it does is it goes out and it does tests basically with all my insurance carriers. It has my login information and it comes back with potential rates. Now I still have to go in and refine it because it doesn't ask all the questions. There's like 200 questions, right? But it gets enough to get an idea within $100 here or there of the rate usually.
Okay.
And so that tells me where you're going to fit, you know.
And when you say $100, that's annual premium?
$100 annually. Yeah, okay. Usually. Lately, because things have been so crazy in the market, it's not been as accurate as it used to be. Like, I just listen to the person and I've been doing this long enough that I know where to go. And I just start quoting. And it depends on the risk type too. Mm-hmm. So if you have a mobile home, for instance, boom, there's 2 carriers. Maybe 3. Yeah. Without going into excess lines, which is going to cost you a lot more to get because it's non-standard stuff. If you tell me you have a pit bull, I probably got 2 homeowners carriers for you, you know, depending on the zip code. And there's things that if you don't tell those things, so I'll use the pit bull example. Say you have a pit bull and you're like, I know that if I tell Jerry I have a pit bull, he's not going to put me in the insurance company that's going to give me the best rate. Well, later,
which is true.
Yep. Later you have a claim and let's say it's not
because
even
your
really,
dog nips a 12-year-old.
That would be the worst case scenario. Right. But even if it wasn't dog related, you lied in your application. And there is a chance that they're going to weasel out of it. And the more the claim was, the more chance they're going to fight to try to weasel out of paying.
So elaborate. You buy a house and you have a dog.
Yeah.
Happens to be one of the quote unquote, quote, risky breeds.
Right. And there's a lot. Yeah.
Akita, pit bull,
wolf mixes. Dull,
yeah. You don't tell your agent about this breed that you know is on the list.
Yeah.
And somebody could be over at your house and choke on a grape, or you can have a small kitchen fire. And the insurance company can come back and say, you lied on your application, even though the incident, the kitchen fire has nothing to do with the dog. The incident in question has nothing to do with the dog. The claim has nothing to do with the dog. You could still be denied your claim.
And there is a potential for that. So you committed
crap.
Yeah, because you committed insurance fraud when you signed that application. And it is in every application. And sometimes it's the agent's fault.
I certify right all information to be true and accurate to the best of my knowledge.
Yeah, yeah. Yep. Now, sometimes there are some clauses for certain things that say if something is untrue, the rest, life insurance is like that. Like if you misrepresent, they don't call it a lie. Mm. They call it a misrepresentation or an error. They're kinder in life insurance. But yes, there is a potential that because you omitted something on your application, because if not but for, right? If they had known you'd had that dog, they never would have offered you insurance for the house. So even though it's not related to the dog, they would never have offered you insurance for that house. And since you had a house fire or whatever else happened,
whatever it
you
was,
cost them something that they never would have had to have paid had you been honest to begin with. So people, do not use 23andMe for your dogs. If you don't know what breed your dog is, keep it that way. It's not important for you to know what your dog is. If you do know, you have an obligation to reveal it. But if there's some question and you don't know, don't do the test, because once you know, you're culpable.
I want to go back to the car thing, because I did have one of my friends, Justin, shout out Justin. He asked, when is the right time for small business owners to insure their dual use personal slash work vehicles? Hmm. AKA, you know, what is the risk if it's covered or is personally insured versus commercially insured? Yeah, think of somebody driving an F-150 that also tows a trailer with their landscaping equipment, things like that.
Yeah, great question, Justin. So business insurance is actually one of my favorite kinds of insurance to do. Homes and autos, motorcycles, you know, that stuff, flood insurance, earthquake insurance, that's pretty easy to do. Honestly, I think it doesn't really challenge me. I love
my property challenged you.
Yours property did challenge
me. Can we
me,
pause this part? I want to tell you how awesome Jerry is. I told you I was really happy with my insurance company. I've been with them for 16 years now. They've helped me on 3 different claims, but I just wanted to talk to Jerry and wanted to see, you know, what the rates were like. And he's like, dude, you've got a great policy. I highly recommend that you stay with them. You might want to talk to them about adjusting these certain areas. You pointed out some of the things that I was undercovered in, but he had the character to actually refer me to stay where I was at rather than trying to convince me to come to him. So I just wanted to edify Jerry what he does a little bit. So back to the insuring your vehicle.
Yeah. No. And that's a philosophy. Not everybody's like that. I want you to be happy and be where you're protected. And if you're adequately protected and someone's doing it for a rate that's fair, it's not right for me to take, you know, to move it. And eventually those rates will go up and you'll come back to me and you're going to refer people to me. Except
well,
the way I treat
I you. Thought it was very admirable. I appreciated it. And it was unexpected. So
thank you. So back to commercial. So commercial is very different. No two commercial policies are the same for the most part. And I do have a variety of commercial carriers. Those are a lot more challenging. There is not really a rater that can help you. You have to know the companies you represent. And this particular question that Justin asked, that's a really good question. There's lots of people that aren't insured properly. So the rule of thumb with your vehicle is, number one, if it is registered and titled in your name, it's a personal vehicle. If it's registered and titled into the name of your business, and I just dealt with this with someone else here in Colorado this last weekend, actually, they called me on the weekend. If it's in the name of your business, it's a business policy and it needs to be on commercial paper. It needs to be written on a commercial policy. Now, there are a couple of carriers that have some leeway on that. Be very careful if that's where you're going. And a good example is like, let's say you're a real estate agent. Okay. Real estate agents use their car for business all the time. Not as much as they used to. They used to have people in the cars, right? Before pre-COVID.
Right.
So you'd ride around
driving with clients to see a dozen homes.
You'd want to make sure that you were with a company that had a business endorsement. Okay. So they put that business endorsement on there. Or if you're driving your vehicle all the time for business, you know, even it's not incidental if you're driving it every day to appointments and everything. So you want the endorsement. Lots of companies will do that. However, if you are in this scenario that Justin gave, Justin, did he say he owned the vehicle or?
I didn't actually.
Okay. So let's just assume that the vehicle is in Justin's name. Mm-hmm. It's a personal vehicle, but he's driving for his landscaping business and the trailer's the landscaping business. That's a challenge right there. I personally would probably put that one in a commercial auto because the trailer is going to have liability and constitute liability. Now, even if he doesn't want any physical damage coverage on that trailer, meaning if the trailer gets destroyed in an accident, if that trailer swings or something, it hits somebody, it's connected to his personal vehicle. So now he's got a commercial liability in his personal vehicle that guess what? His insurance company doesn't know about.
Mm.
Big chance it's going to be denied. I'm not saying that 100% will, but a big chance it will.
It would seem to me that just by the simple fact that the trailer is part of the business and the trailer is now connected to the vehicle, that they're now tied to each other.
Yep.
They're inexorable. The trailer doesn't move without the truck. So now I think a part of the question was, when is the optimal time to actually insure the vehicle under a commercial policy? Like when should somebody at what point, what's that threshold where somebody needs to make sure that their vehicle is insured commercially?
Sure. 100%. If you have any information on your vehicle, you know, people like to put their logo on their vehicle or a phone number or an email address or something like that. The moment you do that, you'd better have it commercially insured.
Okay.
Because you're going to struggle if you have a claim on the personal lines. They're going to look at that and go, huh, this is a commercial vehicle and you have it insured under personal lines. We have an exclusion right in your contract, you know, in your policy, it specifically says that. Shame on you for not reading it or not asking an insurance agent. Another reason you shouldn't, in my opinion, go online and get quotes is that you're not talking to someone who's licensed. So guess who's responsible when you've made a mistake?
You
are. And the courts don't care because the courts are going to say, well, you tried to save $5 or actually probably spent more going online than you would have if you talked to an agent anyways.
But right.
You had the opportunity to go to someone that was an expert who, you know, like for instance, I have to do minimum of 40 credits.
Continuing ed.
I keep saying 40 because that's for a different, I do Medicare Advantage too. So there's something different for that, but for your general insurance, it's 24 credits every 2 years, three of which have to be in ethics.
Okay. Right?
So you're constantly keeping up on things and there's always documents coming out. There's no way that the general average consumer stands a chance when, you know, when they're quoting and trying to figure out their policy, when you have someone who does it for a living, right? It's like, if I break my arm, there might be a few people out there that try to brace their own arm. I'm going to go to a hospital,
yeah, you know, usually.
So I'm not going to do it. You can though. That's the great thing about America. You can make your own mistakes, you know, but you are responsible for them in that commercial situation. You probably need commercial auto insurance to make sure you're covered properly. And you're going to have a higher threshold of coverage too.
How much driving, is there a percentage or a ratio of driving to and from work that is kind of the threshold that you need to make sure that at this point, I need to have this car insured commercially under my business?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of like the home improvement guy, the handyman guy that does one or two jobs a month, doesn't have his logo on the car. It just somebody hires them to come in for a couple hours and patch a hole in the drywall or something. At what point is there a threshold for that? Yeah. Or like, how do you measure and know when you need to make sure that you're covered?
Yeah, sure. So if he's just commuting, you know, he's commuting to work, then that's personal as long as the vehicle is not registered in the name of the business and he's not towing around, you know, commercial trailers and so forth. But if he's at that job site and he's leaving multiple times, he's going to Home Depot, he's going to Lowe's, he's going to wherever to get product and bring it back, he's using that vehicle for commercial purposes.
Okay.
You know, and again, will the insurance company catch you for a $5,000 claim? Probably not. But the moment you have a, you know, someone's injured seriously, they're going to look for a way not to pay that claim. And if you didn't follow your contract, it's potentially a way that you could lose. I always say potentially because there's scenarios and circumstances where there's going to be a one-off, right? Nothing's ever 100%.
Yeah.
And that's why I keep using that word. I'm not trying to be evasive. It's just give that little
circumstantial. Yeah, sure, for sure.
Exactly. But if you are driving a vehicle to work and then continuing to use that vehicle once you arrive at work for work purposes, you should probably have either a commercial endorsement, if that's appropriate for your line of work and for what you're doing on your personal auto, or it should be written on commercial paper.
So if the business is paying your loan payment, if you're towing anything, if you're driving to and from to pick up tools or equipment or materials or supplies for your business, if you're driving around clients, all of these are things that cut and dry. You need to make sure this is on your business policy.
And be careful. So you brought something up that you just said, if your loan is being paid by your business. So you've just, and I'm not a CPA, but I work with them quite a bit. You've just destroyed the protection of your LLC. So might as well not even have an LLC, you know, might as well not have a business because you're using business. And once you start using your commingling your funds with your personal and your business, which now you've just lost the liability protection from your business, you're now culpable as an individual because you've commingled. So rental property is a good example. Have a different bank account. Don't anything you buy for that rental property, use the bank account or the credit card for at LLC or whatever, whatever entity that you tend to have it in. Don't use personal stuff because the moment you use something that's personal, you just lost your protection and you might as well not have incorporated to begin with.
What if you're an S corp or C corp?
It's the same thing. Same thing. Yeah.
Interesting. What are some other things that people really desperately need to make sure that they're they've got in place to make sure their ass is covered in case of a scenario, particularly we'll do this individually, sure. Home, because it's most people's biggest asset.
Yeah. Yeah.
What are some things that people overlook?
So one of the biggest things, and your premium, you can really drop the premium down, is by not having backup of sewers and drains coverage. So the standard amount that you want, I would say, is about 25,000 minimum. Most policies issue with 5,000.
Mm-hmm.
And well, after your deductible, I mean, your 5,000 is probably, you know, eaten up anyways. So the most frequent type of loss is a water loss. Okay. And those are usually there's a lot of things that could come from leaky pipes, et cetera, which aren't covered mm-hmm. for most companies. There are a few companies that will cover those things. It's an endorsement. But if you have a septic system or you're on sewer and it rains a lot, you know, or there's a clog, that stuff's going to come back up through your toilet and showers. That happens more frequently than probably anything else. And the average cost for that is about $20,000.
Whoa.
And it's excluded in your policies.
Really?
Unless you have the endorsement. So whenever I write a policy, I include that endorsement and then I'll do a presentation and they're like, well, I'm going to just mention my friends, State Farm, for instance, we'll just say them, the agent in State Farm didn't quote that. So their premium on their home is going to look a lot better than mine. Well, it's great that you're going to get that premium and you're not going to pay as much this year. But if you have a water incident, you know, I'm now 25 years ahead in premium versus what you paid, because it's going to take you that long to recoup saving that money that you saved. So water is probably the biggest. And then just general safety things, you know, like handrails, making sure that for liability claims, right?
Okay. So
making sure your handrails, if you have three steps or more, are there and people can hang on to them, that your property is well maintained. If you have a trampoline, that it's fenced, you know, it's fenced. If you have a pool, if you're lucky enough to have a pool or a hot tub or anything like that, that it's behind a locked fence. Those are called attractive nuisances, which means kids who don't think so much. I love to tell this story. It's really short. And
break into your property, use your thing.
So when I was, I think I was 6 years old, we lived in this neighborhood in Lacey, Washington, and it was a new neighborhood. They're just building houses like crazy. And me and a bunch of my friends, we're all the same age. We found a home that was locked. It was under construction. It had the framing on the outside up. So we wanted to play hide and seek. Well, they didn't secure that home long enough to keep six-year-olds out. So we got in there. We were playing. I think the fire department or the police, somebody ended up catching us. There's like 20 kids. We were having a blast. Do you know that if one of us had been hurt, do you know who would have been responsible for our injury?
The person building that home.
That's right. Even though I'm the kid and I got in there,
broke in,
because a child doesn't have the ability to make that right and wrong decision, which is why they're a child. You, as the homeowner, have the responsibility. You made an attractive nuisance, you know, in the neighborhood. You attracted children for whatever reasons. You know, it could be a lot of different things. You know, maybe they had a playground on the ground. Who knows what it was, but you had something. It's your responsibility and you will be legally culpable for anything that happens. So you need to make sure your property's secure, right? And you need to make sure you've done everything that a prudent individual would do to protect yourself and to prevent children or whomever else might be part of that attractive nuisance.
Do you remember how you got into the house?
I don't. I remember being paddled pretty severely.
Sure.
Rightfully
so.
Yeah, some parents were probably.
Do you know if a door was open or a window was open or if something actually had to be broken in order to get in?
I think the door just wasn't secured. I think we probably just opened the door.
Okay.
And it wasn't yet. I think there might have had a hole where the handle is or the knob. It just wasn't done yet. You know? And I mean, it was construction people. They were just, you know, construction workers are great at what they do, but they're not really good, as you probably experienced, of securing sites and cleaning up, right?
But and God they don't expect or think about stuff like that.
Right. That's why you have a foreman on the job site who should be doing the right thing.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
I can't imagine being that.
Vacant homes
situation.
Are the same way. Yeah. So if you have a vacant home, that's where people get in a lot of trouble. They don't tell their insurance company their house is up for sale, or if they have tenants, they have a rental property and it's vacant. If that house is vacant for more than 30 days, you need to have it rewritten into a vacant home policy, or make sure your carrier is aware it's vacant so they can endorsement if they offer that. If they don't, a lot of times most companies don't, they'll make you write it into another company, another carrier that specifies in that. And your policies from most carriers say that if your home is vacant and there's a claim, they'll reduce the coverage that you have. Probably, I want to say, don't hold me to this, but I think it's 40% of the value of your home is covered if it's vacant and you have a loss and you didn't declare.
So is that a financial motivation when you say a person, a landlord needs to shift it into a vacant policy? Is that from a liability standpoint or a financial?
Both property and liability. Liability might not even be covered in some cases. You have to read your policy and see what it says
under the vacant home
exclusion, which is in every policy. Yes. Okay. Every single policy has it. It says excludes your home when it's vacant. It might give some terms like, why is it vacant? If it was it listed as a secondary home and it's seasonal, then that's okay. But if you moved and let's say you converted the dwelling from, you were living in the house, for instance, good example, let's say I lived in this house and I found another one and I moved and I got tenants,
okay,
where I would put it up for rent and I didn't tell the insurance company. Number one, it has to be rewritten no matter what, because you've just changed the occupancy from one owner, right? So that has to be first. But if it's vacant, they want to know that because there's a vandalism risk, there's a fire risk. You know, right now in my house, if God forbid a fire started, hopefully my smoke detectors would alert me, right? If there's no one in the house, the smoke detectors aren't going to do any good.
Right.
You know, now I do have a centrally monitored fire system, which helps as well. However, maybe it's disconnected, but no one's in the house to do anything.
Yeah. And so, if it's vacant, utilities might be shut off, things like that might not be
working. So the insurance companies aren't bad in this case. They're just trying to properly rate a risk. And if it's not within, we call it an appetite, something that they're interested in eating,
right,
eating that risk, they're going to say, yeah, we don't want to cover this. You got to go to another company. And it might be more for that risk because, again, the actuary tables are going to say, hey, this is how many losses we have in the zip code for this type of action.
So attention landlords, if you have any rental properties that are going to be vacant for more than 30 days, if you know that there's construction that needs to be done before it can be re-rented or whatnot, make sure you switch that over to a vacant policy.
Yeah, I have no idea that was a thing. And you're not living in it anymore. You've moved out. Let's say you moved to Florida. I don't know what you moved there for, but let's say you moved to Florida.
Florida's attractive to me. I'm definitely considering it.
Yeah, I wouldn't go there because of the flooding and the hurricanes myself.
Yeah.
Insurance-wise, Florida's not a good place to be right now.
Or alligators.
Yeah. Or alligators. Yeah, that's true. That's true. But yeah, if your house is for sale and you've left it, you might not think, oh my gosh, I need to tell the insurance company. They're going to say, it depends on what market. If you're in Washington State, in Tacoma, Washington, for instance, you put your house up for sale, it's going to sell in a day. Other places
with a bidding war.
Yeah. With a bidding war. And even with the current rates. Right. But here in Colorado, I don't know. I mean, I don't know the market well enough for sales to say whether or not that home would sell. I think we've been told they're not really selling. So, situation dependent, right?
One of the things that you mentioned a while back, I remember that I found fascinating. If you're considering purchasing a new home, right after getting pre-qualified on your mortgage, you should really talk to an insurance agent. Mm-hmm. Jerry shared a story, and I'll have you get back into it, of somebody who was under contract on a property only to find out that it was basically uninsurable. They were about to buy a property that just simply could not be insured because of they were in a fire line. But could you elaborate a little bit on that experience?
So here's,
get your mortgage, get pre-qualified, find a place, and then call your agent to make sure that you can get insurance before you go under contract.
Right. And just don't call any agent. And here's the situation. This is where it gets ugly. Okay. And this is an Oregon property that the specific example
that you guys giving.
So there was a property that it had prior water losses and it was in a fire line. And I did everything I could. I talked to underwriters. I could not get insurance on that house, even through my excess lines. Lloyd's of London said no. But someone called an Allstate agent, and that Allstate agent wrote the policy and gave a binder to the mortgage company. So they're able to buy that house. Here's what they don't know. And I represent Allstate too. It's one of my companies. So full disclosure there. So I knew this. I knew Allstate wasn't going to insure that home because when I looked at the underwriting guidelines, it said don't insure it. Well, an agent can override guidelines. There's ways to do it.
Okay. Now,
here's what's going to happen. Because that agent's just trying to make the sale. Maybe they're under a quota if they're a captive agent. They're just trying to, they're not concerned about you, the client. They're just concerned about themselves. And they could have some repercussions as well. But what's going to happen is you're going to sell that home. It's going to be insured.
And they'll think it is.
It is. It is legally insured.
Okay.
It'll be legally insured for 45 days.
Oh.
Because they bound the property. If it was in the agent's binding authority, they can bind that property. Now, what's going to happen, they're going to close the loan on that house. And an inspector is going to go out to the house after the sale has been completed and the insurance is already enforced and they own the home. And this happens. Oh my gosh, I've seen it so many times. You go out, the inspector goes to the house and says, no, this is not within underwriting guidelines. You know, maybe the roof's crappy. It could be a number of things, right? In this case, it was fire line, and there was some weird things with some stairs and all kinds of weird stuff. So that house is going to be canceled. That policy is going to be canceled. All right. So they've got their new house. Now they can't get insurance on it. They have 45 days to find new insurance. I already know they're not getting insurance. Lloyd's of London turned it down, you know? So what's
going to happen? Having homeowner's insurance is a contractually binding obligation for your mortgage.
Correct.
You have to have,
right,
in order for your mortgage to be valid. You
it gets
to.
Even worse.
Okay.
So your mortgage company at that point is going to say, because Allstate's going to send Allstate's going to send that letter that says, hey, to the mortgage company, we're canceling this policy effective, you know, April 1st, you know, 2024. And we gave the client legal notice. We don't want this risk. And the person's going to be like, well, you insurance agent, whoever they went to, the shady person they went to, because you can find someone that's shady that's going to say yes in every situation. Now, Allstate's going to go back to that agent. And depending on how many times that's happened, they may or may not be representing Allstate in the future. Right. So they're taking
that doesn't help you any.
Right.
Just because that guy got canned.
Coming on them. Yep. They'll have some repercussions. But you're kind of stuck. And here's what is going to happen. The mortgage company is going to say, well, your mortgage payment's going to increase by $500 a month or whatever the number is, because we're going to put force placed insurance on your home. Now you're saying, oh, great. Well, they found insurance. I'm protected. No,
they're protected.
They're protected. So anything that happens, there's a fire, you don't get a place to live while you're recovering. You're homeless. All your valuables aren't going to be covered. Any liability, your dog bites somebody or whatever, you're not covered for. Nothing are you covered for. They won't rebuild it. They, unless the ordinance locally requires it to be rebuilt, that force place insurance will just write a check to the mortgage company. You'll never see it.
So you have a burnt down vacant plot of nothing. Right.
And that's in addition to what you're already paying if you pay PMI.
What's that?
Private mortgage insurance. Okay. So if you owe more than 80% on the home and it's not a VA loan, you'll have to pay PMI. And there's other people in our group that friends of ours, mutual, that will do a better job of explaining that, because it's kind of out of my
wheelhouse.
Yeah. But that is what will happen.
Sounds like an absolute nightmare. So what happened in the situation with the Oregon family that you were working with, and that able to come in before they signed, or what happened with that?
No, I will not insure them if they come back to me, because they did something unethical.
Oh.
So I won't work with unethical people either. If you expect me to be forward and ethical, I expect the same from my clients, to be honest with me. So they knowingly lied because they knew what they were doing. I made it very clear to them
that it was uninsurable.
Yes. And I told them the company I quoted it through. And then they came back and they told me that they found an Allstate agent. And I told them, I said, well, I'm an Allstate agent as well, and it's one of my companies, and this is not okay. So, you know, whatever you two are doing in cahoots with each other, you're going to pay the penalty. Don't come back to me for solutions.
And if you get caught, it's fraud.
It is fraud. Yeah. They signed a document. Now the insurance companies generally are not going to go after you for fraud, unless you have a claim. Yeah,
if you have I don't know what this property is worth, but if you have a $650,000 claim because it's a total loss from a fire, then chances are pretty good that there's going to be repercussions for that.
It's always situation dependent. They will sometimes happily take your money. I know carriers that will.
Mm-hmm.
And then the moment you have a claim, they will stop. And, you know, and they'll say, hey, well, you lied. Did you get your premiums back? No. You know, so,
and you don't get your property rebuilt.
It's just better to be honest up front with everything. If you generally don't know something, that's okay. You know, you're going to not know things. I just had someone else contact me. They're with USAA.
And,
not one of my favorite companies. They have a market niche, but I don't think that they're really actually looking out for people, because they're going to give you the cheapest thing. They're not going to really look at coverage most of the time. That's been my experience. I had USAA before I became an insurance agent.
Well, we don't want you in a position to be at jeopardy for libel or slander here. So
no, I will only tell the truth. Like I said, I'm not saying they're a bad company. I'm just saying, I think that they don't, in my opinion, they don't do the due diligence that I do when I help people.
Fair.
Like good example, my own personal example, I came out of the military. I was going to be a farmer's insurance agent. I went to insurance school and they said, bring your deck pages. So I brought my deck pages. I was a major, so I was probably making about $80,000 a year, somewhere in there. And I brought my insurance documentation and I said, yeah, I have all my stuff. And I gave it to him. And the guy looked at me and said, you can't leave this building until you increase your liability limits. I was driving around state minimums. And I was PO. I was angry because USAA let me drive around with horrible coverage because I relied on them. They're the insurance agents to take care of me and they didn't do it.
And this was before you,
this is before I knew anything.
Before you knew anything about insurance.
So that right there kind of ticked me off. Right. Yeah. Because they weren't looking after my best interest. Gotcha. They didn't do the right thing for me. And so I kind of started like, you know, it's an education thing and that's why agents are so important. But this other person, they currently have USA and they do have good coverage. These people have good coverage. They discovered in their home, this is Tacoma, Washington, they found some knob and tube.
So what?
Knob and tube wiring.
Oh, some really?
Old wiring. And guess what? It's still connected. So there's a lot, no standard carrier I'm aware of will cover knob and tube. Okay. There are some circumstances where they might cover a little bit of it, but it's very rare. And it's
so this is the type of electrical wiring that they did back in the 20s, 30s.
Yes. Yeah.
So this really
is
old stuff.
Yeah, this is an old home. I mean, beautiful, beautiful home. And like I said, USA actually did a good job of covering it. It's covered for proper value, right liability limits, everything else. And the client said, I just found out I had this and I didn't lie when I got it because I didn't know I had it. They go, what do I do now? I go, well, now you know. So now you're culpable, which means if something starts from that, you know, you have an obligation to let USAA know that you have this. Now, they're going to non-renew you. Okay, that's what's going to happen. Or you can pay to have it taken out. And he's like, can you help me? And I said, I'll try. I tried. I couldn't find a company that would take it because of the age of the building, the zip code, the proximity to fire departments. So we're working through another. There might be one, but they have to give me some more documentation where I can help them. But that's the thing about being a good client, right? That person is responsible enough that when they discovered something that they knew, because they actually read their policy.
Right.
They knew that this is ineligible and I don't want to get stuck in a situation where a claim won't be paid.
Yep.
So insurance is not it's everybody's responsibility, right? It's a team effort. And that's how we keep rates lower.
Not only was the wiring hot, it was necessary. So that old wiring was actually being utilized throughout the house for their outlet scene.
Right. And they discovered it when they went to.
So they couldn't just disconnect that from the breaker. And
Right. Some electrician came in and they would lose the entire second floor of the house, I guess, with power. Because they just didn't know.
Right.
Until an electrician came in.
So in the scenario of the person purchasing the house, not that particular Oregon couple, but some random Jane Smith or whatever out there, what could be done in that situation or what should be done? Imagine somebody's under contract and they aren't the unethical people that you were discussing, but they are in a similar situation. What could or should be done in that?
Yeah, I would, you know, and there's a lot of emotion that goes in the house buying, right?
Sure.
People get just so I have to have this house. So the first thing I would say is don't let your financial, situation be governed by your emotions. You know, make sure it's a business. You're buying a very important asset, an investment, really, when you buy a house. Don't let emotion become part of it. And that's easier said than done. We're humans, right?
Sure.
We're going to have some, unless we're Vulcan and we don't
know. Especially when you find that place that you fall in love with and you walk through the doors and you're like, I'm home. This is it. I've been looking for this for 3 years, whatever. Yep.
And as a buyer today, you have more strength than you did 2 years ago. So you can negotiate with that homeowner saying, hey, this needs to be done before I purchase the home, or work with the real estate agents to say, hey, upon purchase, a certain amount of money is allocated. You know, we got an electrician to come in immediately. Now you can't insure the home until it's been fixed.
Right.
So that's really a gamemanship between the real estate agents on both sides and the loan officers and what they'll be willing to do.
So if you're under contract, but pre-closing, you know, need to have that conversation and say, this is what's going on. This place is uninsurable.
Right. Well, and there's time. So here's what I've done to some, and it's every time it's situation dependent,
of course.
Right. So there will be some situations where I can call an underwriter and say, hey, I've got a contract for a new roof that's going to be put on the moment they close. And sometimes the underwriters will say, okay, to see that the roof's been paid and it just has to be put on. Depending it.
Yeah. What if you're in this situation where you're in that fire line and you've had previous water damage and it simply isn't insurable?
Yeah.
It's not as simple as like, there's a foundation issue or, you know, there's a roof issue or something like that, or old wiring.
Yep.
There are situations like that where it simply isn't insurable, but you're under a contract. What do you do in that situation?
You're under contract?
Like you've signed, you've put money in escrow and you're under contract. What do you do in that situation?
You got to live with it, I guess. I mean, because you probably had it inspected everything already to if you're under contract. Yeah. So if you've done all the right things and you've decided to tally-ho forward, you know, regardless, you're on your own, you know, very potentially. I wouldn't advise that to anybody. I'd say don't do that.
Well, it's not something that I ever even considered, you know, when I purchased my properties, given they're residential. So it's probably less likely to end up in that situation unless there's something catastrophic, in which case the inspection would have brought it to notice. But making sure that it was eventually or making sure that I could insure it wasn't something that ever came to mind until after closing. So this is a whole new thing. I'm like, I need to make sure and I need to let people know this.
I want to touch on claims.
Okay.
In the current market, insurance market, do not make a claim if you do not absolutely have to. You know, give yourself higher deductibles so you're not tempted to make a claim. Sometimes it makes sense to make a claim. I mean, if you have a good water claim example, for instance, you're out to dinner and the bathtub was left on. We'll just say that happened. You left the water on and you have a 2-story house and it floods the whole house and it's $180,000. Make the claim.
I mean,
it makes sense. That's what insurance is for. Insurance is not like your health insurance. You don't go to the doctors when you have sniffles, right? You go to the doctor only if, you know, your arm is facing the wrong direction. So you should treat your other insurance like that and you'll pay less. In today's market, if you make a claim, one home claim, expect to be non-renewed by your carrier.
Really?
Yes. If you have more than two claims, you will not get insurance from any other company. I'm going to have to go to Excess Lines, somebody outside, Lloyd's of London, maybe something like that. And it's going to be a lot more and a lot less coverage. Carriers have paid out too much money and they don't want to pay out more. You'll notice a lot of companies are even going to percentage deductibles. Like we're a percentage of the home. So you might see that change. They're going to notify you. Make sure you're comfortable with that, right? Know your deductible. Don't call and make a claim. Don't call a company. I'm just going to call it because I don't want to make, there's certain companies that are bad with this and I don't want to say them.
Yeah, don't use a real one.
Let's say it's company Orange Tree, okay?
Okay.
And you call Orange Tree and say, hey, I want to make a claim. And they say, oh, that claim's not covered. Guess what? You still have a claim on your record. Here's why. Because they still had to go through the process. There was still an expense affiliated with that.
And they know that there was damage done.
And they know that there was damage done. That's a good point. Yeah, so that can happen too.
It's kind of like the pit bull analogy.
Yeah,
now they know.
Yep, now they know and they don't want that risk. Mm. You know, so anything you can do to make yourself more attractive to the insurance company, they're in the business to make money. They're not doing this because they want to pay claims, right? Now they will. They will pay a legitimate claim, but they're not in the business to just take you to, you know, whatever's going on. Like I have people that have, you know, 6 speeding tickets and 4 accidents and so forth. And they come to me and then they're shocked when I want them to pay $12,000 for 6 months.
Right.
You know, for really bad coverage. You did that, you know, or make claims. Well, they're like, well, they make a claim because their car is scratched. Don't fall in love with your vehicle. It is a piece of metal. If you want it fixed and repainted, go repaint it. Don't make a claim on it. That $500 claim you make that you're going to get reimbursed for those scratches is going to cost you thousands over 3 to 5 years. And even claims that aren't your fault, believe it or not, hurt you. So someone
that sucks.
This is where it's messy.
Yeah.
Now in some states, there's a couple states, Hawaii's one, where it won't because you're self-insuring. But let's say someone backs into you, it's their fault, it's minor, that is going to hurt you. That's going to be, for many carriers, that'll be a rating because statistically, if you have an accident, you're going to have another one. And I can show you, well, I can't show you, but I have seen enough that this is true. I rarely see people's records with one claim in 5 years. It's almost always 2 or 3.
Hmm.
You know, if they have one, even if it's uninsured, they'll have like 3 uninsured claims. Like, I have one person, he's a personal friend of mine. I don't know why anybody insures him. He's a great driver. He's been hit by
but he's a magnet for
yes. He's been hit in a parking lot. Okay. A person, a backhoe ran into him in a parking lot, a construction came by and rammed him. He was sitting in the car.
Like one of those big orange. Yeah. Okay. All so right.
Not his fault. They were like, oh, it's our fault. And, you know, we're sorry. We didn't see you. Could have killed him. He got a rental car. 2 days later, he's sitting in the parking lot of a different shopping center. He's getting ready to go in and he gets hit in the rental. Why he's in the rental car. Okay. A police officer sitting right there saw the whole thing. Not his fault. All right. Then he's driving, like, no kidding, 3 months later, driving down the road, and the city's doing some work on the road, and one of those backhoes swings by and hits him while he's driving.
Whoa.
Yep. This guy, and I'm not kidding, that's not the end. I can't remember all of it, but it's never his fault. And I told him, I said, your guardian angel is working overtime.
Right.
Probably have four or five of them because there's no way you'd survive all this.
The Grim Reaper keeps chasing him, but the angels keep jumping in and intervening.
And so the problem is his rates are increasing. I think he's got six new cars, right, in the last 3 years because his cars are totaled every time.
That sucks.
And if he's watching this, he might watch it actually because he has it on my Facebook page. But if he's watching this, he knows who he is and he's just going, I can't help myself, right? It's not him. But his rates are going up because the insurance company doesn't care whose fault it is because they're still the ones paying, right? There's a cost involved every time. So don't make claims unnecessarily. And if it's something super small and the person's amicable to it, try to see if they can, you know, fix it for
you. Out of pocket. Yeah. Yep,
if you trust them. Now there's, unfortunately, sure. You got to use judgment, right?
I hope since those two of those accidents happened, one was from the city and the other was probably some construction company. Yeah. He might have a viable civil suit somewhere in there.
Like, yeah. Fortunately, he's not like that though. Yeah,
I mean, he should sue him for $100,000 just to pay for the extra insurance premiums for the rest of his life.
Right.
It sounds awful. And I'm not, you should tell me who he is off air.
Yeah.
So I never have to get in the same vehicle with him. This sounds
he's
like
a real estate agent. Too.
Sounds like somebody I'm more accident prone than even I am. So,
yeah.
Well, we're just broke the hour mark. So is there anything before we close? Is there anything that you would like to touch on? Anything that you feel like we kind of left out or missed getting into?
Yeah. Clearly it's easy to talk about this. We were talking before we started, we didn't really know what we were going to talk about.
I don't know anything about insurance and I'm really not that passionate about it. I hope this conversation can last at least half an hour to 45 minutes. And here we are an hour and two.
So. And honestly, we barely scratched the surface.
Yeah, for sure.
There's so much you could deep dive into. And I'd like to do more of these if we can come up with some topics. If any of your viewers are interested in something that they want us to deep dive on, happy to do it. But one thing that I will say that I think is super important, and this is for parents. Nothing scares me more than if I had a child and they were going to start driving. It would terrify me. I only have dogs and cats, so I don't have to worry about that. But I do, as an insurance agent, I'm getting a little emotional here because I have had clients who have lost children in car accidents, or their children have killed people, you know, and I've seen because they didn't follow the guidance, the recommendations, and, you know, they find an accident has turned into financial ruin, you know, not to mention the loss of the loved one.
Yeah.
So what I'd say is if you have kids or you're going to have kids, they don't teach insurance in school. You are going to be the only person that they get that information from. So educate your children on the importance of insurance. Now, I know you start educating them when they're driving because their behavior is going to impact your rates, right? But it's helpful for them to get an understanding of what home insurance is, renter's insurance, the importance of liability. And, you know, if you don't know, I don't know of any insurance agents who wouldn't welcome you coming into the office with your kid and saying, hey, can you spend 20 minutes educating my family on what insurance is?
And why it's necessary.
Yeah, do it. And then one last thing, life insurance. So important. So important. It's not for you. It's for your loved ones. You've got to have it. It's not that expensive. In very rare cases, is there anybody out there that is not insurable? Now, it might cost a little bit more, but there's some plans that are out there. I do a lot of them. I know people that can do some things I can't do. But if you care about your loved ones, please get life insurance.
If you're going to buy a house, talk to an insurance agent before you go under contract. Make sure that place is insurable. If you drive your vehicle for work, even if it's just a handful of times a month, if you're utilizing that vehicle and you're in an accident and they can prove that you're on the clock or using it for work at that time, your insurance might not cover you for the vehicle or the injuries, the medical bills afterwards. What were some of the other key points? Buy a house, talk to an insurance agent, utilizing the vehicle, make sure it's covered with a business commercial policy. Mm-hmm. Talk to your kids.
Read your policy. And if you don't understand something, ask.
Talk to Jerry. He's talk awesome. He could have had my business if he wanted, and he made sure that I stayed with the company that I was with. He's a really, really great guy, knows his stuff, been doing this for a really long time, has more options available to you. And if any of his 100 and million whatever options don't work, then he will refer you to somebody that will.
I'll do my best. Yes.
Appreciate you, my
Thanks,
friend.
Brian.
Have good a good day. Here. Love you all. Have a wonderful weekend. We'll talk to you soon.
Take care.
Thank you so much for listening to today's interview. I hope there's something in there that inspired you. I hope you're feeling empowered and awed, and something spoke to your soul and resonated with your heart. If you're interested in contacting today's guest, please check the show notes, follow him on Facebook, or send him an email. As always, please subscribe, rate, and review, and share this podcast with anybody that you know that might benefit from its message. This has been BC from A World Empowered, wishing you the very best. I love you all. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.